Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes.
For most of us, when we talk about backpacking and hiking, we're going on maybe a 5, 10, or even a 15-mile hike. Sometimes it could be for a couple of weeks. We've spoken to thru hikers who have taken several months to do their hikes. Today's guest is an endurance athlete. Today's guest is going to talk about his not all of his 17 records, but a few of them. He's going to talk, he's going to give us some background on what an endurance athlete is. He's also founder of Backpacking Routes, author of the book Free Outside, writer, mental health activist, and adventurer, and a fashion icon. Jeff Legend Vermeier, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Jeff, I just, when I started doing the introduction, I was like, you know, just, there's a lot to cover here with what you do. You have an incredible level that you work at outside, right? Like I said, some of us will think about 10 and 15 mile days of hiking, maybe running a 5K. That's a lot of work. You do what's called fastest known times, and that's an endurance that takes endurance athleticism to another level. Could you start off by telling us what an endurance athlete does?
Yeah. So I've done kind of a combination of these thru hikes and piecing longer and longer thru hikes together, getting up into the 7,000 and 8,000 mile range. And then I've tested myself on kind of speed challenges like fastest known times, which is basically covering a defined trail, let's say the long trail, since that's one of your favorites, in the fastest time ever reported. So that's kind of what an FKT is, stands for fastest known time. And I guess the pro endurance athlete side of it comes from a decent amount of my income is pretty tied to, you know, the stories, the experiences, the things working with brands around some of these endurance things. And whether that's, you know, speaking, working with brands directly, things like that, that's kind of where the endurance athlete thing comes from. And then, as you mentioned, I fell in the gaps with about 100 other different things.
Because your fastest known time attempts and records include trails like the Superior Hiking Trail, Timberline Trail. You've done the Arizona Trail. You mentioned the Long Trail. Anything I'm missing here? There's 17 records, but are there any peaks that you have fastest known times for?
Yeah, one of my favorites is actually the tallest peak in Costa Rica. So I set out to break the fastest known time that was set by a professional ultra runner who won Western States twice, Timothy Olsen, and I missed it initially by 3 minutes. And so 4 days later, I went back up and destroyed the time by 20 minutes because I just could not stand with the bad taste in my mouth. And that whole climb, it was about 24 miles with like 9,000 feet of elevation gain. So it was a pretty difficult one. And I was still sore going up it a few days later, just after I'd initially missed the record. But I was just fueled by, you know, motivation of missing it by such a tiny margin.
That was going to be my question was, you know, after attempting it, your body must have felt like it had gone through the ringer, right? You must have finished up mentally and physically beat up, but you've pulled yourself together and said, while I'm here, I'm just going to go try again.
Yeah, exactly. I was only in Costa Rica for like 4 more days and I had to leave the next day, but it was like, if there's one thing I'm going to do, it's going to be try this thing one more time. And it actually rained. The conditions were worse, but the motivation was higher and just the familiarity with the route and everything. And it's pretty interesting. Once you get a gauge of a trail and a, kind of an idea of what you're doing, you are likely to be more successful and more prepared. And that's kind of rung true through a lot of records and things. Like, I recently failed at the Superior Hiking Trail, but until I started that, I'd never done a single mile of it. Whereas my first major FKT on the Arizona Trail, I broke the record by like 3 days, but I'd also hiked I'd hiked 90% of the trail before. So I just had this better idea of what I was getting into. And so I think that really is such an overlooked fact of a lot of things, whether it's, you know, even running a marathon or just going on a difficult peak or a climb or something. It's, if you've seen it and done it before, it just makes it so much easier. And you can actually think through the steps in your mind. And when you haven't seen it, it's hard to parcel out like a 350 mile attempt into something shorter.
Yeah, I went through that this summer. I rehiked a section of the Appalachian Trail that I had done a few years ago. With COVID, transportation just didn't allow me to get out and do what I wanted to do. So I said, all right, I'm going to pick my favorite section that I know I can get to. And it, what seemed like was more, it just didn't seem quite as difficult doing it the second time. I enjoyed it. But when I got down and I remember Massachusetts heading up towards the beginning of the long trail, I knew in my head what I was going to be in for. So it was something about, you know, mentally I was able to pace myself, you know, and that's what I can look at is saying, okay, why did it feel easier? Well, maybe I was able to pace myself better. I knew what would be coming up. I knew what the difficult sections were on that area I was going to be hiking for that week.
Yeah. I think it's funny. There's been a number of examples like this and peaks and things I've done. Like, there's this mountain near Ledore, Idaho on the Continental Divide Trail called, I think it's called Moose Mountain or Moose Peak or something like that. But it's like a 4,000 foot straight up, not much water along the way. And I just remember I've done it twice, and my first time it just destroyed me. Like, my legs were screaming. It was windy. It was just painful. It hurt the whole way. And I was dreading it for days leading up to it. And then the day that I was going up it, I didn't even stop, just went straight to the top and dropped down into the valley on the other side. And it was just this strange thing, like, huh, maybe I built it up in my mind, or maybe the variables were different that first time. But I think it's so driven mentally by kind of how we frame things. And, you know, sometimes it's very different physically than actually what we envisioned mentally it was.
Jeff, what came first for you? Was it a love for hiking and backpacking, or were you a runner?
It was initially, I grew up backpacking mostly to go fishing at lakes. Like, my family, we would wear really heavy external frame packs, backpack in, carrying a 10-pound rubber raft and fishing poles, and learn to fly fish at, like, 3 miles into a lake. And that's kind of how backpacking was for me. And then in the middle of college, in high school, I kind of wanted to be more connected to friends and played sports and stuff. So I really lost my way for the hiking and the outdoors. But then in the middle of college, it was kind of stagnating. Didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. Still don't. But I just decided I was going to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. And so that was 2011. And I started out with an external frame pack. So that was really the beginning of the intro into this world. I'd never really trail run before or hiked any long distances or done a resupply on a hike or anything. So that was 2011, 55-pound backpack, Mexican border, hiking north. That was my introduction to thru hiking.
In 2011, when you set out on the PCT, you weren't looking to do it, set a record, let's say, or to run it. You just were doing a traditional backpacking trip.
Yeah, I was just setting out, and it later came out that my parents said to each other, well, we'll just see how far he makes it. But my pack broke at mile 650. It was too heavy for the frame to handle. And I hiked with a broken frame for 50 miles and then sewed up an old pack out of the hiker box with dental floss, and I cut about 10 pounds, and from there it was a slow drop until I finally got to somewhat of a respectable amount of weight over many years.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using the permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors. All right, so you cut your teeth into backpacking, not by, you know, watching hours upon hours of YouTubes and reading books. You just, sounds like, got your gear, went out and hit the trail and started hiking.
Yeah, I took basically overnight backpacking gear on a through hike, and it proved to be possible, maybe not the most comfortable, maybe not the most suitable, but it was really about getting out there and figuring it out along the way. I think that's really something that I've noticed a lot lately with all the information out there, all the YouTube, all everything is, you can know a ton of stuff, but you don't really know it until you're using it out there. And I think the most important and most entertaining thing is to just go out there and maybe have something fail or a mistake and be like, well, these are the things in my pack. Here's how I can fix it. Or this is what I got to do. Like, oh, I forgot a lighter. I can't cook the meal I brought. So I either have to find someone to borrow one from or just ration my food out over a long period of time. I think it's those little things that make the actual experience of backpacking so much more than just you hike somewhere, you camp, you hike again, and you finish your backpacking trip. It's all the little things along the way of running out of water or mismanaging food or an animal or something like that. Those are the fun things that, you know, don't often come up when someone asks the generic backpacking questions.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see mishaps. I don't see, you know, I forgot this or this went wrong. It's an adventure. All those little things just add to the adventure.
Yeah.
If you just say, okay, on day one, I'm going to set out and take my first step on this trail and I'll be finished on this day and everything goes perfect. Every piece of gear works perfectly. You have just the right amount of food. You've got just the right amount of fuel. Okay, that's nice. But to me, all those other things really add to the adventure. I always say we don't have bad situations. We have good stories,
yeah.
Good stories to tell afterwards.
And I think the reason I have really been so drawn to backpacking and these FKTs and multi-day adventures is because in normal city life, if I'm, let's say I'm driving an hour and I get thirsty halfway, I could just pull over and get a water or something. But when you're backpacking, you have to figure out how to deal with maybe that discomfort or maybe adjust your plan on where to camp or maybe a water source was dry. It's like you get to come up with these solutions that you don't even know what the problems are going to be along the way. And that's something very lacking these days in life, kind of like maybe there's an unexpected email or something, but when you're backpacking, it could be like, shoot, I forgot to put in the stove or something like mm-hmm. that, which is, that's a, that makes it fun.
Yes. I tell people, I don't care how experienced a backpacker somebody is, they still have their adventures, I'll say.
Agreed.
They might have forgot the lighter. Maybe they forgot to change the batteries and a flashlight or something.
Yep. I showed up to a trail race about a month ago and I'd packed two left shoes. So I ran it in two left shoes. So talk about being experienced and making a mistake. So I cut a hole and ran it in two left shoes.
That speaks to what you started off saying. You're forced to adapt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just going home, you said, okay, I'm going to make this happen. I'm here. I'm going to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
Right? When you're out on a trail and you get to a spring and there's no water, well, you still need water. You're still going to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's always solutions along the way. Some of them are just take a little more effort and are a little more painful, but whether it's hiking off the trail a mile or adjusting your plans or even going backwards for say water or something, but there's always a way in most places out there. And I think that's the fun. You're just solving problems the whole way. It's like a puzzle.
Do you have a point in your life or a situation where you cross that line between being a traditional backpacker to being an endurance athlete?
I think at least the point where I realized I wanted to try to go for something like that was in the middle of the Great Western Loop, which basically links the Pacific Crest Trail, the Pacific Northwest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, Grand Enchantment Trail, Arizona Trail, all back in a loop. So it's about a 7,000 mile loop around the Western US. And I was in the middle of that around mile 5,000 or so. And there is this ultra running challenge called Nolan's 14, where you link 14,000 foot peaks in Colorado on an off trail route that basically is scrambling. And it's about 100 miles long, plus or minus, because everyone goes a little different route. And the challenge is to do it in under 60 hours. And so I had my backpacking gear pretty ultralight at that point, and I decided I wanted to give it an attempt. And so I started out early, pushed through the whole thing, and was able to finish in 59 hours. And that was kind of eye-opening, because many big, well-known ultra runners, endurance people, fail at that. And this was with backpacking gear. So I just kind of thought, I think I want to try to do some stuff fast. And so from there, I looked at doing some FKTs moving forward, and then pushing more and more into that that space, and really just went from there. It built from where you have an idea, you test it out, and you see a glimmer of, you know, possibility, and then you just kick that door open and really go for it.
I've heard on more than one occasion people make the comment, well, I don't know how these people who go for these fastest known times can really be out there enjoying the trail. Mm-hmm. You keep doing it. I'm guessing you're enjoying the trail, even though you're going for the fastest known time. You look like you're having fun out there.
Yeah, I think that I enjoy backpacking, trails, hiking, all kinds of stuff in many different ways. Like a couple weeks ago, one day I went on a really hard trail run by myself. The next day I went on a casual hike with another person. And then a different day went on a pretty nice trail run with someone else. And it's like, I enjoyed all three adventures, all different, all just one day things. And it's kind of how backpacking and FKTs and through hiking are too, is I really enjoy things where you're pushing it physically and getting to, you know, see as much as you can in a defined period of time. I also enjoy taking a book out there or taking a camera and practicing, trying to get a little better at photography or something like that. I think going into each thing with a goal and what I want out of it helps me enjoy it however I'm looking to, I guess. It's really, I think it's hard to say what the why is, because you can set it ahead of time, like, oh, I'd like to go out there and take some really cool photos of this alpine lake, or I'd like to go and try to set this record, or I'd like to go and just push myself and, you know, only do, try to do 40 miles a day, but without night hiking or something like that. Like, you can set each thing that you want to do. And I think life is a series of goals, and achieving those goals is enjoyable. And it really is the journey along the way that is how you enjoy them. I think when you're hitting so close to your limit on something like an FKT record type thing, you're getting to experience a different mental state, a different part of yourself than you would on a backpacking trip, where you get to read, enjoy the sounds of the birds, and just soak up nature. And it's not better, worse, it's just different. So I think that's kind of how I would put it, is a lot more people gravitate to the faster things on social media and such, but I definitely do at least as many miles at more of a casual level, just because it's what I love to do.
Right. You have your days where I'm not going for a run, but I'm just going out and going to take my time and enjoy what's out here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just such a connection in walking or moving or even just listening to the actual sound of the world versus headphones. So I really enjoy that as well.
And your most recent YouTube, which I think went up, was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, probably about 2 weeks ago.
You were running up to Huron Peak in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Is that like atypical how you go about your training? Were you training to do a FKT on that one, or did you set out to do it? Because I know when you got to the bottom, you hadn't accomplished it in the time you had set out to do so.
Yeah, that was just, I don't know, a fun experience of setting a goal that's completely arbitrary, that I wanted to climb it and be back down within a made up amount of time just to see if I could. And 2 days prior, I'd climbed Mount Elbert at more of a casual pace, which is the highest mountain in Colorado. So I really like the changing it up and trying different things and doing it different ways. And it's really fun to push really hard, just kind of what we talked about too. And it's fun to take some videos along the way and put them together. It's also fun to not take anything. So I think, I don't know. I think the only typical thing is that nothing is typical for me.
Going out there and whatever the outdoors throws at you, it throws at you, and you'll enjoy whatever it is.
Yeah. I think I stepped out of my front door or the car door, and just right then is when I decide what it's going to be.
I'm either going to walk up it or run up it.
Yep.
I'll know when I get out of the car.
Exactly.
Fastest known times in regard to trails, long distance trails. I want to clarify with everybody, there's two approaches to fastest known times. There's supported and unsupported. Would you mind telling us the difference between the two?
Yeah. So a supported fastest known time, it's basically a trail record. It's set up more in a like a race style or something like that, where the person attempting it can have pacers, crew along the way. They can basically receive any level of support as long as they cover with their own feet the entire route. And so those by nature are usually much faster, mostly just a running pack. Most people have a crew where they can sleep in a vehicle. And then I gravitate more towards the unsupported style, which is completely self-reliant. So you carry pretty much everything you're going to need the whole way and get water along the way yourself. You have no crew, no help along the way. And I just like that because it's so self-reliant. I don't think I've got over the block of putting someone pressure on someone else or depending on them for the success or failure of something when, I don't know, I think the more I've done, it's really about pushing it along the way and just seeing how close you can get. And that's where I really like depending on myself. And when I'm hungry on day three, do I dip into the food I have reserved for day four, or do I go to bed hungry? I think those are the things that are kind of fun, interesting, and just require a very high level of, you know, mental fortitude to push through.
And I'm not taking anything away from the people who have done, who have these records on with the supported hikes. That's difficult to do. I don't think I know I could never do it, but I've watched videos. I've watched some documentaries. What you're saying is, and I've seen this, they'll get to a road crossing and there'll literally be a crew waiting for them.
Yep.
With a van. And I know one of the documentaries I watched, I think they had maybe even a podiatrist there, a dietitian. You know, so that, you know, their whole thing was, yeah, I'm running this and I'm going to try to do it as fast as I can, almost like a marathon sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then the other group which you're in is the unsupported. It's I'm doing this with everything I can get on my back to carry on this trail from one end to the other.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very different styles. It's kind of funny that they're lumped into the same record. Just, you know, one is very much like a race is set up almost with aid stations and stuff. Whereas the other is like, I'm trying to only rely on myself and not have anyone around, which is kind of completely the opposite of having a pacer for every step of the way.
Right, 'cause I want to say this without sounding like I'm being judgmental or condemning the people who have the supported hikes. But as a backpacker and somebody who day hikes, I know how much more difficult it is to hike 10 or 15 miles with a full backpack on than it is to do it with a day pack.
Yeah. Yep. It's way harder to do unsupported attempts. I'll go ahead and say it. I think it's just funny when
you've done it, so you can.
Well, if it's like 7 days long and you're on day four and you're really craving some type of food, you're not going to get it unless you're supported. So unsupported, you're going to just have to eat a handful of peanuts again.
Right. You can't get to the road crossing and say, wow, when I get there, I hope the hamburgers are ready for me to eat.
Yeah. No one's going to have hamburgers for you. And if they do, all you can do is smell them and keep walking.
You could use it as motivation to finish up faster. Right? If I get off of here, I can go into town and get a real meal.
Yep.
On that note, the long trail, a trail that's near and dear to me. I've hiked the long trail, end to ender. You hold the record for the fastest known time unsupported on the long trail. And I watched your video on YouTube. And everybody, please go check out Jeff's YouTube channel. Great videos. Entertaining, first and foremost, Jeff. Your videos are entertaining.
Thanks.
And that's important, right? Because I'll be honest, you could watch a lot of these videos and just blah, 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 blah. I have this tent here and it works great. It rained today. I stayed at this shelter. Your videos are entertaining.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I just can't. I couldn't look at the camera and just, you know, spout off 10 facts about the piece of gear I'm using. So instead, I maybe spout off 10 myths about the piece of gear I'm not using.
When you did the long trail, you put the miles up on the screen that you had done every day, and I 48 miles in one day. Your last day, you did 58 miles, and it rained.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when it's raining, 10 miles feels like a lot.
10 or 12. In Vermont? Yeah.
I spent 2 days this year, two straight days just hiking, and it felt like ankle deep mud and water in southern Vermont.
Yeah, that seems about right. I think that trail is so strange because it can be everything in one day. It's like many places like Colorado or the Sierra say they can get every type of weather in one day, but I think Vermont maybe could get it in 1 hour some places.
Yeah. Yeah, we arrived at the hotel and there were some AT through hikers, some LT through hikers, section hikers. And the guy at the hotel was just like, there's a hose around back to hose off your boots as soon as you walked up. And everybody just you felt like you had cinder blocks on your feet from all the mud. Just over a couple of days, it was getting on your feet. But back to your fastest known time. That journey, you could see it, how hard that was for you. I'm watching that and I'm saying, wow, there was no sugarcoating it. You put it all out there.
And yeah. Tell
us about that.
Yeah, it's a funny trail, especially because I would say it's so different. Like about half of it's on the Appalachian Trail and the other half is like the true essence of Vermont half. And I started in the north, so I did what's deemed the harder portion first. And much like starting a marathon and sprinting from the gun, that's basically what I did. And then on the morning of day two, my legs were just so locked up. It took like a few minutes of massaging them just to get my socks and shoes on because they kept cramping up and seizing. So it was sort of like this is a different level of trail. Just the effort alone. And it was, you know, like 20,000 feet of gain or something in one day and things like that. That trail will just take everything you got. And I think it was like an eye-opening experience. I spent about 2-3 weeks maybe training in the Sierra Nevada mountains. I did the John Muir Trail plus some exploring of Yosemite that year. And it just was, it was good for like elevation and stuff, but it was, didn't even compare as a trail. Like I just showed up in Vermont and it was like, holy cow, this is different. Like I'm having to give myself 10 second rest, like every 5 to 10 minutes up some of these steep sections. And from there, I'm just pushing, redlining. It's pretty much like if I was trail running, but I just was walking with the backpack on. I don't even think I knew that you could tax yourself that much continually backpacking. It just was a different beast. And then, you know, I had this, once again, an arbitrary goal of 6 days that I wanted to break. And that was all that occupied my mind. I think the record was maybe 6.5 days, but I just figured 6 days sounded like a good goal. And that's what I counted on. And, you know, by days 2, 3, and 4, I was having a rough go. Things didn't look good, but, you know, with such a long time, so 6 days out there, you go through ebbs and flows, ups and downs and all kinds of stuff. And just was able to recenter myself with like, you know, a pep talk and finished with some huge days. And I finished in, you know, like 5 days and 23 hours and 50 minutes or something, which I think opened my mind to the idea that, you know, if you set a goal and you want it bad enough, like your body is just going to figure out a way to get it. I mean, I got my goal by like 9 or 10 minutes, but I wonder if I would have set it an hour earlier, would I have got that by 9 or 10 minutes? It's such an interesting psychology thing that it kind of put in my head of, define your goals and then you can work from there.
Now you had, it was a 48 hour period where you had little or no sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. This was one of my biggest times of just hallucinating. The ground was bouncing. I think I took, maybe like a 5 or 10 minute nap in there, but and since then I've done a lot of sleepless periods too, but this was like very on in my trail record and FKT experience and stuff. And it just broadened the outlook into, wow, if I'd done the Arizona Trail before, just a couple months before, but it was like, wow, if I can do this much more, I wonder how much further I can take everything. So it was this whole reset your limits or set the boundary of what you think you can do a little bit further out. That's what kind of adventure it turned into, just with what was required to make it through. It was a very, it had everything in it, I would say. And anyone wondering what kind of trail to hike or anything, I think that a lot of stuff in the West gets praised and stuff, but the Long Trail will give you just about anything you want. And, you know, there's actually views out there. It's not always a green tunnel. You're not going to get as killed by altitude sickness as some of the most sought after trails in the West. And I think it's a pretty special route.
And I've heard that from people that have hiked trails out West. In fact, I wrote, months before I started my hike on the Long Trail, I read an article by somebody who had hiked the John Muir Trail and thought, okay, I'll go out to the Northeast and hike the Long Trail. I did the John Muir Trail. It can't be that much more difficult. And they just were blown away that, you know, how much more difficult and the different things that throw at you. Now, you didn't have the altitude to deal with, but especially in northern Vermont, and you did it southbound. So you get out, once you start to, those hills start to flatten out a little bit, you have a little bit of a break there between Brandon Gap and Killington, but then you're into Mudville after that. After you've gotten over all those hills, you're looking at that elevation profile and you're like, okay, it gets easier from here. Nah, now you're going to have to slug through mud for a few days.
Yeah. It's funny how, you know, we compare things by distance, but it is very different than most trails, 270 miles long. It's going to feel a lot longer.
I went up there being able to do 10 to 15 mile days with a backpack on, you know, relatively easy. And I just remember after the second, third day saying, wow, you know, these 8 to 10 mile days are tough.
Oh, yeah.
But you, 48 miles, 35 miles, and then finishing with 58. Wow. Now, did you come out the other side of that then, I guess, saying, okay, I can, you started to say, you could do more, right? I did this, everything this threw at me. Maybe I'm ready to do more.
Yeah, I think initially I was like, wow, my ankles are so swollen and my legs are so broken. But I think it was like, eventually I think I can do more. But that trail really just chewed me up and spit me out. But yeah, it was this I think probably the first time in my life that I set a very defined goal that I wanted to achieve and just snuck under it. It made me just think more about the mental side and the mental preparation going into things, which is also something I failed at recently with my Superior Hiking Trail FKT attempt. Is I just didn't put the time in and was too busy leading up to it to mentally prepare and think things through. And, you know, I can show up as physically prepared and ready to do anything, but whether it's a through hike or an FKT or a day hike or even a run, if your mind isn't in it, it's either going to be a miserable experience or you're just going
to
quit.
Do you have any plans to go back to the Superior Hiking Trail?
Yeah, it was beautiful. We'll see if I go for an FKT out there or not, but just being out there as the leaves were changing in the fall made it a must see. And then I took a detour to check out the Boundary Waters on the way back west. And it was just like, wow, how do these not get profiled more? There's so many trails up there. It's so far out there, so remote, so many lakes, so many beautiful reflections and boreal forests. So it's just incredible area up there that I had no idea. So one reason I kind of went up there is over the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years now, every year I've tried to do one hike or backpacking trip or thing like that in an area I've never been before. And so I've done Alabama, Northern Vermont kind of was one, Costa Rica, and Northern Minnesota. I've done Arkansas. So yeah, just trying to find a number of new places and experience more than just the biggest city that seems to have the airport, because there's a lot more to all these states.
That sometimes seems to be maybe just as big a challenge as hiking is the logistics. How do I get there and get home?
Yeah, absolutely.
I went through that last year. I had plans to hike the Whites and transportation was still not back to normal last summer and ended up changing my plans.
Yeah, point to point through hikes are just, it's one more headache. I mean, I think whether hikers are still out there or just finished up, it's always interesting when you hit the terminus and you're like, well, now how do I get home?
That's where I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm going to hike up to Maine from Vermont on the Appalachian Trail. And what am I going to do once I get up there? How do I get back to New York?
Yep, that's a good
I don't want to walk back to New York. I just walked from Vermont to Maine.
Yep. Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's been such a tough thing, since a lot of these trails, they're not starting in the big city or anything either. So it's just a head scratcher. And I think, you know, half of some of these adventures is just getting to the adventure.
Do you have any peak bagging lists? And for people that maybe aren't familiar with that term, that's for people that hike up to certain peak, high peaks, like the Adirondack 46, Catskill 35, Colorado 14. Do you work on any of those for fastest known times?
I've never done any for fastest known times. The first summer I moved to Colorado in 2015, I did all 58 of the 14,000 foot peaks in 2 months, just so then I could cross that off my list. But I've never done it for like a specific fastest known time. I simply wanted to see if I could use all my weekends and finish them out in one hiking and backpacking season. And I was successful. There was snow on the ground for the last one, but other than that, not much weather. It was pretty fun.
What are you working on now? Are there any peaks you're working on at this point, or are you working on or looking at a trail to attempt?
I've been doing a little bit more organized racing and then looking at a few options for trails coming up, maybe sneak something in the end of this year, but you know, things are very busy. But looking at some trails for like a early spring or something for next year, maybe a record attempt. I'm gonna race this one event in Arizona that's called Last Person Standing. So every 15 minutes you have to run a mile, and if you finish that mile before 15 minutes you can take a break, but then they start you again every 15 minutes, and it goes until everyone has quit except for one person. So that sounds pretty stupid. So it was like, sign me up. I'm in.
You just keep going, see how far you could push yourself, right?
Yeah. It was like, I've never tried one of these. Maybe I'm good at it. Maybe I'm not, but I'd like to try.
You also describe yourself as a fashion icon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you really put it all out there on the trail. You really wear some stunning hiking gear.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you can go into any store online and get a classic shirt and then look like all the other hikers, or you can find something loud, fun, that makes you smile, makes you enjoy photos later down the road, to come up with your own ideas. A lot of people do thrift store shopping or find like floral dad shirts and things that they wear. I think it's kind of catching on with the people as well. And, you know, I have everything from like a fur coat to, of course, modified tiger sweatshirts. And actually just partnered with 11 Skies to come out with some tiger colored shorts too. So it's really a fashion brand that's just blowing up.
You mentioned shorts. One of your videos, you talked about wearing high shorts and Crocs.
Yeah.
Kind of a sexy look out on the trail.
Oh, yeah.
Turn a lot of heads, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, Crocs are definitely a head turner. They're one of the best looking shoes out there, and so versatile. You can cross a creek and not have to take your shoes off, and you can put them in sport mode or slipper mode and just be good wherever you're going to go.
I take them as camp shoes, but I saw somebody on the long trail who said she had been hiking for 3 days. The bottom of her hiking shoe had literally fell apart, pulled away from her shoe to the point where it was becoming dangerous or it was flapping around. So she decided, oh, I'm just going to put my Crocs on and hike for 3 days. And she said she felt more comfortable in those than the hiking shoes.
Yeah. I've gone on a number of hikes in only Crocs before. And on the fashion thing, I've done like 30 mile trail runs in jorts. I've pushed a stroller in races, you know, two left shoes. I'm not afraid to try everything, whether it's by mistake or on purpose. So, you know, I'll just go for it.
Well, don't ever tell anyone it's by mistake. You're a fashion icon.
Well,
you didn't know that wearing two left shoes is the style in 2021 or 2022?
Well, how I was walking after that probably didn't lend itself to a lot of adoption. A
friend of mine runs 5Ks. Is it true you ran a 5K wearing Crocs?
Yeah, of course. So I'd mentioned to some people in the Bozeman running community that I'd always wanted to, or I'd always considered running a 5K in Crocs. And, you know, it was just more of a thought for a while. And then my friend said, well, you know, there's a 5K this weekend. And it was like, and you're going to be there, or you're going to be in town. And it was just like, shoot, okay, I guess I'm doing it. So that day I went and bought a brand new pair of Crocs just so I could get the full cushioning in a brand new pair. And then I started training. I just tested a couple different types of socks and, you know, got used to running a little bit in them, and then showed up at the start line, went for it, and I got second in my age in Crocs. And so, yeah, it was a pretty fun experience. I would say that it was pretty good for 2 miles, and then that last mile just hurt quite a bit. I probably should have gone with some socks with a little more cushion. And this wasn't even a true road race. It was on gravel and trails a little bit too, which really made it a little bit more difficult than Crocs with every turn. They don't seem to have the same lugs or the grip on the sole as maybe your traditional shoe. But other than that, I would say it worked really good.
Another love of yours is coffee.
Yeah.
That's something we have in common. I love my coffee.
Yeah. I think that's one of the hardest things to cut out for an FKT, and I will have caffeine or like in gels or something in different ways, but it's just hard to want to give up the stove and the hot coffee in the morning. As you know, I talk about these backpacking trips, when you read a book, there's nothing better than being out there reading a book, sipping your cup of coffee, staring at an alpine lake. So I would say coffee is quite a love.
And we recently did an overnight where the plan was get up first thing in the morning, we're going to watch a sunrise, and then go right back down to the cars. And afterwards, we were talking over, you know, what we liked. Well, what would we do different? We decided to keep things light. We're not even going to bring a stove. We're just going to bring protein bars, eat those, and just to get ourselves down the trail and get over to a diner. Mm-hmm. But we kind of were agreeing, you know, it would have been nice to have a hot drink in the morning. Yep. One friend drinks tea, I drink coffee. But yeah, there's something about that hot drink in the morning when you're out on a camping trip or a backpacking trip.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite and oldest sponsors and work closely with is a coffee company, ironically. So I think that, yeah, it's CS Coffee. And what I think is, it's so hard to find good instant coffee or the right way to make it in the backcountry, that I think that it's just become one of those things where, I don't know, my aunt always said that, or has always said that there comes a point when there's no longer a reason to drink bad coffee or bad beer. So I think I'm getting to that point where I agree.
Do you bring any special gear for coffee? Do you bring a French press?
I've done the French press in the past. Right now, I like the CS instant coffee stuff, which is basically, I guess it's freeze dried, and it's like a South American blend or Central American. And it's like got a little bit of texture and kind of frothy too. So it's well, I'll get you some sent out there and you can let me know what you think.
Oh yes, I'd love that. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just one of those things where once you find things better than your cheap Folgers instant or Starbucks via, whether it's, you know, there's different pour over methods too, and or a French press or something in the backcountry, it just becomes like, why would I ever go back to that?
Just drinking the cheap old instant. Yeah, I'd like to give it a try. Because right now I just go with a single instance, or sometimes what I've done is I'll buy a jar of the instant coffee and portion it out.
Okay, that's good too. Yeah. Yeah, sweet.
But I've been known to, I've got this little cone device that I pour that I bring real coffee with me and pour the hot water over into my mug. I can be a bit of a coffee snob at times.
That's good. I don't think that's a bad thing. It means you have a refined taste.
I'd like to talk about some of the projects you're working on off trail.
Yeah.
You involved with this company, Backpacking Routes How's that going along? We did an episode where we covered that. Can you bring us up to date on how that's coming along?
Yeah. Yeah. We're just continually adding routes. So basically we're focusing on the United States at the moment, and the fundamental goal of the company and the website, backpackingroutes.com, is to really give all the resources you need to go out and hike a trail, including the GPX file. And what that means is we're trying to put these routes up that are great routes, but people might not necessarily know them, since there's been so much focus on the big three, basically the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail, that we thought, why not spread kind of the impact or the hikers and give them other ideas? Or like, we're going to come out with one called the Art Loeb Trail here in the next couple weeks. That's about, you know, maybe 30 some odd miles long, and it's just accessible. It's a full trail you can do, and maybe a long weekend or something like that. And that's really what we want to go after. Or if you can get 2 weeks off, maybe there's the Ouachita Trail down in Oklahoma and Arkansas, and here's all the resources to do it. It's like, what can actually apply to a lot more people than who either are going to just section hike a long distance trail for a long time, or are going to take multiple months off. Like, there's a lot more people that are looking for adventures and backpacking trips and things that they can do within their abilities and their skill level and their time off and just their schedule in general. And so that's really the fundamental concept of the company. And then of course we do sprinkle in some news and some gear stuff and different things like that along the way. But fundamentally it's about giving people resources, ideas, and just the ability to go find their own adventure and do their own through hike. A through hike is such a, you know, difficult thing to truly define, but I think any of these trails would be your own personal through hike. And that is something awesome. There's something rewarding about starting and finishing a trail and just being able to do the whole thing within the time constraints and things you have. And I know that I've been lucky to do some really long ones, but it's not in the cards for everyone. And I think promoting people finding a way to do their own through hikes is really important.
Jeff, when I started this podcast, you know, if I were going to list motivators for me to want to talk about backpacking and hiking, that was exactly one of them. We don't all, and myself included, have the time. Our life situation currently doesn't allow us to go out and hike any of the big trails. Mm-hmm. But there are so many of these smaller trails that can be done in a couple of weeks, some of them in a week or a few days. There's that sense of accomplishment when you finish. You know, I'm personally struggling with, you know, I've got sections of the Appalachian Trail completed at this point. Do I want to keep trying to chip away at the Appalachian Trail? Part of me saying, no, I don't know. Maybe I want to go out and do more of these smaller trails. So I come home saying, yes, I finished it.
Yeah. I think that that's a huge thing. There is this really cool thing of having a goal and just fitting it in to do, whether it's point to point or a complete thing, like even looking broader than the major trails. I discovered some incredible routes just in Montana last year, that one of them, there was basically no information online, and it's called the Gallatin Crest Trail. And that's on our website now. And just having that kind of information, and, you know, I plugged the waypoints for the water and stuff like that. Like, there was no trail in places, so few people had hiked it. It was just maybe a cairn or something, but for 30 of the 40 miles, it was spectacular views off both sides of the crest of the Gallatin Mountains. And a lot of those places are just like, why aren't people using this? And why are we just continually using the same trails? And we're going to put permit systems in place and use quotas and things like that. Whereas I think we can all still get out there, and, you know, especially if we use places responsibly, but there are a lot of places that we're just not recognizing or not going out to. And I think it's kind of cool to introduce some of those.
And that's another side of this. In 2020 and even in 2021, we are still in the COVID period. We're still not out of the woods on it, but we were seeing a monumental, an historical increase in the number of people who were going out and enjoying the outdoors. Here in New York, the Adirondacks we're seeing record number of people in their parking areas to the point where it's becoming hazardous. And now they're in 2021, they start experimenting with permit systems in certain areas. And then this past summer, I hiked in Massachusetts and Vermont and did some sections of the AT and LT, did a lot of side trails. But those times I was on the AT, I couldn't help but thinking, are we overusing these trails? Mm-hmm. Is it time we really start promoting these other trails?
Yeah. And I guess combined, I'd done the Triple Crown trails, like six through hikes on Triple Crown trails before starting this website. And it just made me really think, like, these have changed so much in, at that point, it was 9 years. And it became like some of the places I've been offer as much or more in a smaller period and are just so much more attainable. Like, there's always going to be that draw to through hike one of the big three end to end and stuff. But then there's also the people who just without like the knowledge or the resources that just decide their best bet is to section hike along the big three. And it kind of became like, well, there's some great routes that I've seen down in this area. Why don't you check them out? And it's like, and I shared some GPX files with people to help them go do that. But eventually it was like, maybe you should just put this out there more. So you can see that within maybe 50 or 100 miles of where you were going to drive out to hiking out and back on a trail, you could actually do an epic loop with some cool lakes along the way as well.
In a lot of cases, people might be finding they don't have to travel across the country or to the middle of the country to do a trail. I know trails like the Pahoni Trail, which you've recently done, or you've hiked that trail, right? Mm-hmm. The Superior Hiking Trail, starting to get more attention. The Benton McKay Trail.
Yeah. Yep.
These are nice trails that could be done. People that maybe can only get a few weeks off for vacation.
Yeah. Even something like the Collegiate Loop in Colorado, it's like 160 miles versus 500 miles, which the Colorado Trail is, and you get to do a loop. So there's just all these little things that I think should be more publicized, or at least spread out the use and give people these options to explore, you know, similar areas and similar landscapes, but maybe on a slightly different route, and spread the impact a little too.
How can people get more information about your company here, by Backpacking Routes?
Just backpackingroutes.com is going to be where all the resources are hosted. And then social media, it's at Backpacking Routes. And then I think it's BP Routes on Twitter. And then, yeah, you can shoot me an email if you want or interested in writing up a route at jeff@backpackingroutes.com. And we're always looking to expand just with most of us out west now. We are really working to expand some of the stuff on the east side. So
that's great. And that's great work, what you guys are doing. I've been on the website and I really like what you're doing there. I think that's great. And it's encouraging more people to get out there and do this. People that might be saying, I could never through hike. Well, go on Backpacking Routes and take a look around and you'll find something you could through hike.
Yeah. And the other feature that we have is we've ranked each trail in terms of logistical difficulty and physical difficulty or terrain difficulty. So if you're new to backpacking, you can find easy logistics and easy terrain and go with that. Or if you're not new and want to tackle a challenge, you can look at the harder, the more difficult end. And it's all sorted by region too, if you go to that sort tab. And I think that that's pretty important, as we wanted to cover the range of people where it's like, yeah, these are all written by people who have backpacked them before. And so it's not like we're just regurgitating info online. And it's also really promoting all the different skill levels where you can find something that works for where you're at or what you're looking to do, whether it's a distance, a difficulty, or a location.
Jeff, you wrote a book, Free Outside. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, it's about hiking the calendar year Triple Crown in 2016. So I started in May at Springer Mountain and I started in February at Springer Mountain and headed north straight through the winter all the way up to Katahdin. And it was my first real winter backpacking experience. And so I had the plan to hike the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, and Continental Divide Trail in the same year. It started out in the winter, and it's really just the story of pulling it off with probably a little less experience than would have been good. Like things like swimming the Kennebec River in the winter and freezing. The book kind of starts with that explanation of how I, you know, make a lot of mistakes along the way as 26-year-old, just quit everything, spent all my savings on this, and was able to complete it. So I did the Appalachian Trail North starting in February, the Pacific Crest Trail northbound starting in early May, and then I did the CDT, Continental Divide Trail southbound, in late July, and was able to finish them all up about mid-October. And the book covers all of that, whether you want to focus on things like getting attacked by a moose or just freezing in negative 15 in a shelter in the Smokies and 3 feet of snow, or many mishaps about mosquitoes or burning a hole in my tent because I was trying to cook in it, or, you know, just lost micro spikes, just emotional turmoil. All kinds of fun is in there. And so, yeah, I encourage you to check it out. And I read the audiobook version on Audible. So if anyone is more of that mindset or likes to listen while they hike.
And where is the book available?
It's available pretty much everywhere online books are sold. So, of course, Amazon, some libraries have it. Or if you would like a signed copy, feel free to shoot me an email or message me on Instagram or something, and we can figure that out as well.
Okay, that's great, Jeff. And you said you had a moose attack while you were out there.
Yeah, near Steamboat Springs in Colorado, in northern Colorado. I came around a corner and I thought there were two moose sheds, antlers on laying on the ground. But as I got closer, it turned out they were just two moose sitting in a ditch. And one of them got up, looked around a little bit, and just charged right at me, put his head down. And I just jumped into this like bramble, this little shrub, and crawled back and hid behind a tree. And he could see him looking around, but he couldn't see me anymore. And then slowly walked back to where he was. And then I backtracked on the trail and dropped down into the valley and went way around. But it sure shook me up there. They are big animals.
Yeah, we think about bear attacks, encounters with venomous snakes, mm-hmm. even cougars, but a moose attack is just as dangerous, could be just as deadly.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I'd say it's right up there with getting charged by a grizzly as well. So I'd say moose and grizzly are pretty high up there.
Film. Let's talk about your film.
Yeah, so last late August and September, set the record on the Colorado Trail unsupported and filmed along the way. So this is going to be a documentary about breaking that record, and basically have a rough cut right now, working on some sound mixing and color correction and that kind of stuff. And in 2022 should be coming out, and we'll be announcing that probably a touring, like some screenings in a few cities. And then the goal is to have it streaming and available through one service or another at the end of that. So yeah, that's super exciting. Working with Dylan Harris and my friend Jason Fitzpatrick, putting that together, and it looks really cool and epic right now. So excited for everyone to get to see that.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And I talked about how your YouTubes are entertaining, but they're also well produced. So I can only imagine we're probably going to see that quality or better. Sounds like you've got a crew involved.
Yeah, I would say a lot better. I mean, I like to have fun with the video, but definitely know my limitations and that kind of thing.
Right. This isn't you out there with your GoPro or your cell phone. This is.
Yeah, this is
an actual film crew.
Yep. It's going to be cool. So excited to share that with everything as more things come up.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that, and we'll be posting information on the website. Hopefully when we get a release date, we'll make sure we announce it on papabearhikes.com.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks.
Any other goals you're currently working on? You talked about, you know, going back to the Superior Hiking Trail and some other, you know, this Arizona race you're going to be involved in? Anything else you're working on for 2022? Sounds like you've already got a lot on the on your plate for the coming year.
Yeah, I think, man, it never ends. Trying to hopefully get through a second book, probably maybe sometime in 2022. Yeah, man, so much. The movie, and keep going with backpacking, routes.com, improving my own website, which is just freeoutside.com. And yeah, it's, I don't know, it's a lot of creating and a lot of writing. So I write for a number of places too. So I think it's going to be, it's to be decided, still really just working it all out and everything.
Jeff, where can we find you? You gave us the website for backpacking routes. We've talked about the book. How about if we want to find information on Jeff Legend himself? Yeah. YouTube, etc.
Yeah, YouTube, the channel is just Free Outside, and so where you can find me by searching Jeff Garmeyer, and that's Garmeyer. Then on Instagram, it's at the Free Outside, and same thing on Twitter, at the Free Outside. Got a whole Facebook page too, which is facebook.com/freeoutside, and all that stuff. Yeah, beyond that, anyone can always email me at jeff@freeoutside.com and ask me questions or anything as well. Pretty reachable and somewhat responsive depending on the platform and what's going on. But yeah, it's always happy to connect with people, and especially if they're wanting a signed copy of the book, figure out how to make that happen.
Well, we'll make sure we put all these links in the podcast description so people can, you know, I don't want anybody pulling over their cars or even worse, trying to write this down while they're driving. Remember, we want to be safe out there, friends. That's great, Jeff. You know, I really want to thank you again for being so generous with your time and sharing these stories with us and coming on Papa Bear Hikes.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun. Covered a lot of stuff.
You know, we'll have to talk later on. Maybe after the film comes out, we'll get back together and you can bring us up to date.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
All right. You have a good night. Everybody, go out there, have some fun, and be safe.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please feel free to leave a review. If you found it helpful or useful or just entertaining, let us know. We can be contacted at papabearhikes@gmail.com or check us out at papabearhikes01 on Instagram. Thanks for listening. Get outside and have a great day.
This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.